The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Hope you had a great sports weekend. If you were an Arizona State fan or a Cardinal fan, you did not. It was a brutal weekend. I mean, just, ugh. Not that the games weren't great. I mean, Friday night, I went out for a bit because that's what I do on Friday nights. I was going to watch USC, Utah, and I got to get back in the swing of things with these knees. So I made it through like 45 minutes of Mountain Point. I wanted to go support those poor kids after the coach was a snake on them and a traitor and a Judas and all that stuff. So I went over to Mountain Point Hamilton for a bit, then came home and watched USC and Utah. And then Saturday it was just like all day long. I saw the mighty ponies of SMU take down those frogs of TCU. What a great job of coaching by Sonny Dykes and 16 transfers. He's doing it the right way. And then Jim Harbaugh's got it all figured out in Michigan. And Stanford just looks like a world beat. No, just kidding. And Washington State's defense is no, just kidding. And Arizona State's defense is so it was games all day. And then yesterday, I was in this mindset of do something other than football for a bit. So I tried writing, and it was just painful. I'm in that space, guys, with these double knees, getting them done, that they're just days. Like I'm telling people now, I'm in the middle of June where it's 116 degrees and there's no end in sight. You're just like, oh, and I'm not sleeping. I can't sleep. These things are healing in the middle of the night. So you're sitting there or laying there and you're asleep. And then all of a sudden you just wake up at 11:15 and both knees are on fire. Or you have a nerve at 1:30 this morning, or it's just nonstop. So I said to you last week when I got back, I'm going to walk you through this journey. And I'm not going to do hour by hour. I'm just going to tell you, when you don't sleep, it's hard. And when you go to rehab before you come to a show, it's hard, especially when they're doing new things on you and trying to tweak some things out. It's an hour and 45 minutes of, like, you just got to mentally get ready for pain. So I'm glad that I'm here because this is not painful. Now, Eric might think the opening is painful. I don't think the opening is painful. We're brought to you by Sagicor now. Protect what matters most. And you've got to do that with life insurance. Life insurance is something that I was sitting across from a longtime friend on Thursday. This person reached out to me. He's actually known in the community. He reached out to me and says, I want to know how you're doing with your knees, but I also need to talk to you about my life insurance situation. It's been something that I've put off. This is someone that has gone through life and he's gone through the ups and downs, as all of us do. And he just wanted to get some questions answered. And so we had a good time just sitting there rapping about that. And, you know, it may be something for him that he looks at and says, I need to do this in the future. You just need to log on for yourself and get some answers at Sagicor now. Sagicor now. Don't put them off, guys. There's no one there looking over your shoulder. Just log on and check it out at Sagicor now. Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, comes up in 7 minutes. And then with ASU playing Cal this Friday night, I thought it'd be good to have Charlie Rago come on board. Because Charlie is one of those, I won't call Charlie a legend unless, Eric, is Charlie a legend? Has he reached that status yet here in Arizona? Is he too young?
No, he's not a legend.
What is he? Just a good guy?
He's a very, very good coach.
Established, right?
I don't throw around the word legend in passing. So,
Jared Nielsen's a legend.
Jared Nielsen is a legend.
He is. He navigates the 101 every day to get here, or most every day.
Wow, you really need the world's smallest violin today, don't you?
It's not
knees, traffic, not sleeping, taking a shot at your producer over SMU TCU. Ouch.
I wasn't taking a shot.
You definitely took a shot.
I was just watching the game.
Oh, you definitely took a shot, but that's
ponies,
okay.
The ponies look good.
You might not be happy to be here, but I'm happy to be here. So
the
good
ponies
morning.
Look good. I'm happy
nice
to be here.
Nice to see you.
I'm happy to be here.
No, Charlie Rangel is not a legend. He's a very good coach, though. He's won state championships.
So truth serum in you.
Okay.
Were you cheering for Kyle Allen yesterday?
Of course.
Truth serum.
Of course.
Now, I felt like sending you a text saying, what are you going to do after the game? But you're better than that. So
what do you mean?
Like, there's no reason to go hear Cliff Kingsbury try to explain that away versus hearing from Kyle Allen, in my opinion. In my opinion. So that was just me yesterday. Their
gotcha.
Defense was not good.
No, the defense was not good. But there's something to be said for taking the road less traveled. And if you know Kyle Allen, he took not only the road less traveled, he took the road that pretty much no NFL quarterback takes.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I mean, I have a little history with the family, and
it's a good history, by the way. Don't take it negative.
I don't root, but it, I don't know. Come on, what do you mean you don't root? I like the happy endings to stories like that.
So here's the thing. I would disagree with you on the road less traveled. Gardner Minshew, road less traveled, right?
No.
Oh, come on.
Oh, Kyle Allen's story is way better than Gardner Minshew's.
Gardner Minshew had a chance to go to Alabama and said, I'm going to go to Washington State against five other guys.
But he played.
He played
Kyle Allen didn't play most of his last year and left early to enter the draft where he was not drafted.
He had a bet on himself.
He had a bet on himself.
But I guess you're misunderstanding me.
Okay.
It's not the Kyler Murray story any longer.
Neither of them are.
No, it's you can go be a quarterback. You can go be Josh Allen at Wyoming, and everybody's going to say this idea that you have to go to Notre Dame or like you have to go to one of five schools to be an NFL quarterback is just it's over.
I agree.
You don't have to do that anymore. You know, yesterday down in, look at what the New York Giants did yesterday down in Tampa Bay. You know, it's Duke.
And everyone, including myself, completely made fun of that draft pick when it came down. Like Daniel Jones, really.
But I guess where I'm at on the weekend with Kyle Allen, the fact that he's going to play next week, the fact that he was sitting in the stands last year with the Allen or the Kirk family watching Christian play for the Cardinals, and then Christian calls him and says, "Hey, I need somebody to throw with me. Let's go throw together." Those two dopes were sitting here.
Yeah, I know.
Together,
I know.
A couple
That's
years
crazy.
Ago. Yeah, they came in studio and they had the gun show going and they were being dopes. And, you know, so when you see those guys do their thing. Yesterday, Kyler Murray, to me, looked like a rookie NFL quarterback yesterday. It finally happened. And he looked skittish. He looked gun shy. He looked whatever term you want to use.
We saw frustration, Brad, and we hadn't seen any on-field frustration from him because he's been so even keeled.
Right.
But he's frustrated. I mean, he hasn't lost three games or two games in a tie in, what, his whole life probably?
Eric, unless I'm wrong on this, which is entirely possible, but I don't think it is, the Cardinals are 1-9-1 in their last 11 home games.
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought you were going to say it's projecting to being 1-9-1 looking at the schedule.
No, I'm not going to do that. But they are 1-9-1 in their last 11 home games. So this whole thing about protect the nest and, you know, all that stuff, it's just, no, here's where it is. And so yesterday I went for a bike ride and I was hearing Cardinal talk and our good buddy Craig Grealou and Mike Jarecki are just sitting there and every person who's calling in is saying, well, first of all, fire Kime. Well, first of all, fire Kime. Well,
yeah,
first of all, fire Kime.
My favorite was, we need to change the offense. I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen. It's three games into the year and you have a brand new coach and a brand new quarterback.
And I've done post-game talk shows for NFL teams. So you just have to know that going in, a lot of the people that are calling have been nipping on the cooking sherry most of the day. So they've got liquid courage going, A. B, firing Steve Keim is going to solve exactly what at this point? If you look at their draft class this year, I wouldn't say it's terrible. Would you say it's terrible? I wouldn't say it's terrible. So here they are. I'm more disappointed in what happened with Arizona State, and yet it's predictable. Eric and I were texting on Saturday about stuff, and I felt the same as him. He's like, let's just see how ASU does against Colorado, because here's how it goes through the years. This is like 25 years of this stuff. We are the greatest. We are the Sun Devils. We are Sparky. We are being disrespected. Oh, everybody's got to be paying attention to us, and then they're sleeping on us. You guys are sleeping on us. And then they play teams. Look at how great our defense is. Look at how great our defense is. And I'm just kind of sitting over here saying, you guys played Kent State, and you played Sacramento State, and you played Michigan State, and you're trying to tell me how great your defense is. So, of course, what happens? They get run over. they got worked by Colorado. And Colorado's best player wasn't even on the field most of the night, and they got worked. And look, I'm not sitting here throwing this out there like this is back in the TG left lane hammer down days. No, because the coaching staff is much better. The program is much better. Everything is much better. But because there were so many misses, Herm's out there playing kids all over the place who, guess what, are going to make mistakes, who, guess what, hear all that nonsense about how great they are, who try to find cameras on the sidelines after ASU beats Michigan State to yell at them and say, see, you guys are sleeping on us, rather than do the mature thing, which is just walk to the locker room. So ASU, to crap the bed, which is what they did, they could be 4-0 and ranked in the top, I don't know, 20 probably today. They would have gone from like 24 to 18, 19, something like that. With a national game against Cal on Friday night, nope. Instead, they're out of the top 25 and they're 0-1 in the South. And this happens all the time with them. They're well on their way to the road to Chase Field for a bowl game, or El Paso, or Las Vegas, or San Diego, all destinations that are not desirable unless it's summer vacation. And people are like, wow, you really hate on ASU. No, I'm not hating on ASU. I'm just preaching fact here. That was a bad loss the other night. Michael Fabiano is next, and Charlie Ragel's going to Skype in. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst for NFL Media, all-around great guy. The time of season now coming up to week number 4 of fantasy duds, fantasy studs. We could go there. We've got injuries. My mailbag's got questions all over the place. But why don't we start with the story that happened here on Sunday, and that is Kyle Allen. And Mr. Fabiano, are you surprised? And everybody's got to pick him up now, right? If they need a quarterback, there's no question, right?
I don't know if everyone's going to pick him up, but he is going to be one of the big waiver wire ads this week. Actually, I said last week on NFL Fantasy Live that he is a really good 2QB super flex DFS option. And I didn't expect him to throw for 4 touchdowns, but I did know that the Cardinals' pass defense is terrible. And I tell you something right now, the Panthers have already ruled out Cam Newton for week 4 after that performance that Allen had. So they're basically sitting back and saying, hey, Cam, you get 100%. You get healthy. You're fine. You know, we'll get you in there when you're back at 100%, because they really like what they saw from Kyle Allen. And it was a nice little homecoming. He went to high school in Scottsdale there. So big game for him. And another trend that we are seeing with the Cardinals defense, every tight end has destroyed them.
Yeah. Yes.
T.J. Hockenson went off. Mark Andrews went off. Greg Olsen went off. So suddenly any tight end who plays the Arizona Cardinals is a virtual must start in fantasy football. And that's going to be the theme moving forward. So Will Dishley will be a nice sleeper in week 4.
All right, let's go through strategy then with Cam Newton. What is your strategy with him if you're owning Cam Newton right now?
I mean, I'm not going to cut him, but there's a lot of good young quarterbacks out there right now. Mm-hmm. I just mentioned Kyle Allen. Danny Dimes, Daniel Jones looked great. And a rookie who can run with the football is very valuable, and he's even more valuable when the defense stinks, because he's going to have to make plays to come back and erase deficits. So Daniel Jones is certainly an option out there. Heck, Gardner Minshew, the mustache.
Yep.
He's looked pretty good too, almost 18 fantasy points last week. So we sort of have to unlearn what we've learned in terms of young quarterbacks, because a lot of times we either target them for a defensive matchup, or we avoid them altogether, or we avoid the players around them in the offense. Well, now suddenly we're seeing more often than not young quarterbacks coming into this league and looking pretty darn good.
The Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano is with us. I mentioned off the top about fantasy duds. I'm getting a lot of mail today of people jumping off the Baker Mayfield bandwagon. Where are you at with him in fantasy, Michael?
I mean, listen, everybody in the industry thought he was the breakout quarterback for 2019. And so far, he has been broken. And that's partially because of that offensive line is bad. Mm-hmm. His offensive line is an issue. And Baker's also, he's turning the ball over too much. I mean, he's got 5 interceptions already. So I'm not saying that you drop him, but I will tell you this. He's not a must start. And I said this in the preseason, there is no must start quarterback in the National Football League unless it's Patrick Mahomes. That's it. Everybody else is based on the matchups. I don't care who it is. Aaron Rodgers isn't even a must-start quarterback anymore. Hell, he's not even an elite fantasy quarterback at this point. So play the matchups. Next week, Baker's in Baltimore. I'd rather play Kyle Allen.
Hmm. Mm. So along those lines with Baker Mayfield, the same people are all over Adam Thielen and James Conner. Give me a thought on both of those through the first part of the season. Would you turn them fantasy duds?
Thielen, it's not what we had hoped he would be, but I mean he hasn't been awful. Like, he's 24th in fantasy points right now. Unfortunately, his teammate Stephon Diggs has been awful. He's averaging 4 targets a game, and the problem is, when Kevin Stefanski took over last year for a couple of games, I mean, we started to see him utilizing Dalvin Cook in the running game.
Yep.
We didn't know it was going to be this extreme, though. Like, I mean, Dalvin Cook is just unbelievable right now. They're running the ball a ton, and that is hurting the value of Kirk Cousins, who's basically droppable now. It's hurting the value of Thielen, and it's hurting the value of Diggs. So when you're seeing situations like that, I mean, it's an offensive philosophy change. And we expected it to be a situation where Dalvin Cook was going to be the centerpiece of the offense, but maybe not to this extent where, I mean, the first week, Kirk Cousins threw the ball, what, 10 times? So you sort of live and learn and you pivot. And at this point, I think maybe what you do is, if Diggs has a big game, you try and flip him. It's the same thing with James Conner. Like, James Conner, if we knew that Ben Roethlisberger wasn't going to be the quarterback in Pittsburgh in drafts, James Conner was never going to be a first or second round pick.
Nope.
Heck no.
Nope.
No chance. And now you're seeing a situation. He's got the Bengals this week, and so he should go off. The Bengals are terrible against the run. So if he gets off and has a big game against Cincinnati, it's time to sell high on him. That's what I would advise with James Conner, because I'm going to try to do the same thing myself.
Okay, a couple other names on the dud so far. Will Fuller, Zach Ertz. People just off those two.
I mean, Fuller is what he is. Fuller is a guy who's better in terms of real football than he is in fantasy if he's not getting into the end zone. He's a field stretcher on a team that now has, you know, you've got Nuke, you've got Kenny Stills who's eating into targets, and you've got Kiki Kuti as well. So Fuller for me was never going to be anything more than a wide receiver 3, and at this point he's a matchup-based guy at best, maybe useful during the bye weeks. Zach Ertz is a surprise to me. The Eagles were down everybody yesterday. Alshon Jeffrey was banged up. DeSean Jackson was banged up. And he still didn't put up a great stat line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, currently guys like Will Disley and Darren Waller have more fantasy points than Zach Ertz. I think that'll change. Things will turn around. If you look at two of the top three tight ends that were drafted in fantasy this season, I mean, George Kittle hasn't been all that great either.
Nope.
He's at 33 points in PPR league. So, I would say stick with him. You know, Ertz and Kittle are both guys you're playing every single week, if for no other reason, and that tight end position is super, super thin right now, just very thin.
All right, before I get you out of here, two other questions for the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano.
Yep.
You can check him out, of course, senior fantasy analyst with NFL Media. A lot of questions about strategy with Melvin Gordon, that the agent community is saying he's going to come in at some point. Is it worth adding him and just stashing him and sitting on him? Where are you at on Melvin Gordon?
Gordon is not a free agent in any fantasy leagues, and if he is, then that fantasy league should be completely
disbanded,
eradicated. Right? Yeah. So basically, you're sitting back and waiting, just like everybody else, you know, to see what happens. He's got to come back because it defeats the whole purpose of him holding out and then not playing this season because it hurts his free agency. So, the question is, I mean, Austin Eckler has been awesome.
Yeah.
You know, does Gordon come right back in and play the same role that he did last season? Eckler's third in fantasy points among running backs right now. He's been tremendous. 19 catches out of the backfield. So maybe that is going to be more of a timeshare than we've seen in the past. We're all waiting to see. But, I mean, Melvin Gordon is a hold right now. There's no question about it.
Julian Edelman, Saquon Barkley injury updates before you get out of here.
Edelman is having an MRI today. Hopefully it's nothing serious. I think maybe if the game was close, he might have come back yesterday, but I'm also not a doctor. I'm just guessing because they were just absolutely crushing the Jets.
Yeah.
And Saquon, our Ian Rappaport, is reporting that he's going to miss several weeks. We don't have a firm timetable, but it's a high ankle sprain. And typically when a player has a high ankle sprain, he's going to miss a little bit more time than if it was a regular sort of lower ankle sprain. So Saquon's going to be out for a few weeks, and Wayne Gallman is going to be the most popular ad off the waiver wire in fantasy football. A big drop in terms of talent and value, but he's going to get volume.
As always, appreciate your time and your insight, Mike. Thanks.
All right, take care.
It's Michael Fabiano. There's the Hall of Famer, senior fantasy analyst for NFL Media. Good stuff there. Meat sandwich from Michael Fabiano. Charlie Regal is scheduled to join us via Skype on the other side. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. So last week on the site, I was pleasantly surprised to see Eric, and I shouldn't be surprised whenever Eric does this, but in his zone read, which is must read every week, he reached out to Charlie Regal a little bit about Saguaro and Chaparral. Those two teams met last Friday night. It actually was a terrific, close, nail-biting game. Charlie, of course, got it done, had it up and running at Chaparral, went on to U of A, went from U of A to Cal. This Friday night, the Sun Devils travel up to Berkeley, where they will take on the Bears, and we figured let's have Charlie Regal come on board. He has now risen to the ranks of special teams coordinator under Justin Wilcox's staff. He joins us via Skype. It is good to see you, Mr. Regal. How are things for you and the family in Berkeley?
It's good to be seen. Thanks for having me. Everything is great. Family is great, and obviously that time of year where we're getting into the thick of it, so obviously a very busy time, but nonetheless, exciting time for us here at Berkeley and doing well.
If I had told you that you and I'd be sitting across from one another on ASU week undefeated, as a coach you'd say, of course, but... But would you have bought into that? I mean, potholes are potholes. You haven't had any yet.
Well, I think we've had some potholes. We just haven't fell in them, you know. we've certainly had our fair share of issues. But, you know, our kids have just done a really good job of being resilient and battling their tails off. And, you know, when you do that and you play smart football, obviously good things happen. And obviously that's what's happened to us right now sitting at 4-0.
Charlie Regal with us talking about Cal, special teams coordinator with Justin Wilcox. Of course, Charlie Regal, I won't use legend yet because you're still very young, but one of the biggest, brightest names on the high school front in Phoenix at Chaparral, then went to U of A. Now he's at Cal, ASU at Cal this Friday night. From your perspective, what has gone right for Cal this season?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think that, these kids, as I mentioned earlier, are just we've in year three here, the kids have really bought into the culture. And that's something that starts with Coach Wilcox. And as he talks about smart and tough, and, you know, obviously we've played, with his background, we've played some solid defense. And you're starting to see on the offensive side, Bo Baldwin really start to get Chase Garbers going. And I think just collectively all around, you're starting to see guys step up and make plays in all three phases. And again, it's really a testament to these coaches on our staff and the kids just buying into what we're asking them to do. And again, the results have spoke for themselves the last four games.
Charlie, across the field, what do you see in Arizona State this Friday night?
Well, I think similarly, you know, you could see a team that certainly believes in what they're doing, ran into a little bit of a snafu against Colorado, but a team that certainly believes and is playing hard and doing a real nice job. I mean, you know, I think that the one thing that we share in common is that we both have kids that, you know, you really, when you watch the film, these guys are playing their tails off, and we know we're going to get fully tested on Friday night here in Berkeley.
It's no secret you have come into Arizona and you have cleaned house when it comes to recruiting. What is your secret sauce, if you're willing to share it, of convincing Arizona high school kids to go to Cal?
Well, I mean, there's really no secret sauce. I think at the end of the day, anyone that knows me and anyone that's spent time with me is I value relationships and I value people. And I think the success that I've had at Cal going back and recruiting the state of Arizona is because of a lot of those high school coaches and those relationships that we have, you know, fostered a long time ago, and just the value of that. And then once we get on a kid and start tracking and building those relationships, not just with myself, but the entire staff. And then what we have to offer here, I think, is elite, and it's different. You know, it is a combination of big time football playing in the Pac-12. And then obviously the degree of Cal speaks for itself, and being in a mega area like the Bay Area with so many Fortune 500 companies and startups and techs and the things that you have access to, it's really a hard place to not consider.
You rose to the top of high school coaching here in Phoenix when you and I first met, but you've gone the route of college as an assistant coach. Do you miss being a head coach?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, just always, as you, you ultimately, you know, you, I aspire to be a head coach again. And I think, you know, running a program is something that is that I definitely want to do. But I have gotten so much better that when I do get that opportunity, I'm going to be better before, you know, just being around the head coaches that I've worked for, whether it was my time at Arizona State with Dirk Cutter, Rich Rodriguez, and now Justin, and all those guys that were on those staffs. I really have been fortunate enough to be around a lot of good coaches, and I've learned a lot from it.
One other question before I get you out of here, and that is on the high school front. Let's go back there, and you cannot be specific. I understand that. And for the audience, he can't talk about specific kids. In this state, how has it grown from your view in terms of players and recruitable at a Pac-12 level? Because when you and I first met, I'd say there was maybe a couple of dozen. That number has quadrupled. Maybe I'm even being light on that number. What has gone on here in Arizona, Charlie?
Well, you're right. It's grown immensely. And I think the level of football continues to grow. Not just from a, you know, a player standpoint, but from a coach's standpoint, a program standpoint, and building programs and really watching programs grow, whether it be startups or older programs that have a resurgence. But I think, one, obviously the Valley continues to grow population wise. And then again, the attention that has been put into some of these football programs, you're seeing it. I mean, you know, when I first got out there in 1999 and started coaching high school football, you know, you didn't see the likes of a Florida State, a Georgia, an Ole Miss, you know, Ohio State, you know, places like that, Michigan, coming into the Valley, Texas. You know, now it's not, you know, you're not surprised to see, you know, go to a school and see Alabama, see a Georgia in there, you know, see a Texas. That's a common theme every spring. So I think it's a testament to the job the high school coaches in the Valley have done and continue to do. And it's only makes our job tougher out here on the West Coast, but it's, again, a testament to them, and they should be awfully proud of it.
You've done a great job up there, Cal. Appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always great to talk to you. Take care, Brad.
It's Charlie Regal with us via Skype from up in Berkeley at the Cal offices, and it's ASU against Cal this coming Friday night. I am not big on the Friday night games. It has nothing to do with ASU. It has nothing to do with Cal. It has everything to do with the TV contract and exposure. I get it. Much rather be out at a high school game, but I will be watching this for sure, and it's always good to catch up with Charlie Regal. Later in the show, we'll have some news and notes around the college football scene as we continue on a busy Monday. Stay with us. So I think on this Monday, we've already banged on the Cardinals and what happened there. Now they've got Seattle coming here this week, but I'd like to move the conversation to a couple different spots in this segment. And one of them is it time to get off of ripping the Pac-12 conference in football? And here's why I'm asking this question. Even though we saw what happened with Arizona State losing to Colorado, and even though we saw what happened where a nationally ranked undefeated program like Washington State is up big, and they give up 50 points and a half to UCLA, and even though there's all these programs that were ranked in the top 15, top 20, top 25 within the conference, Cal going down to Ole Miss and winning in the SEC. Now, whether the final call of the game was correct or not, it's always something, isn't it? But and even, you know, USC beating Utah. Look, is this conference better than the ACC? So far, I've seen ACC football. I've seen Clemson, and I've seen Pitt, and a little bit of Louisville. And I would say that the Pac-12 is better than the ACC if those are the programs. I saw not enough of Virginia to make a guess on it or not. Are they better than the SEC? I don't know that. Are there enough teams that could compete with the SEC? I don't know that. I think there are. Eric, is this a good time to have the discussion? We're a month into it on the Pac-12. Because everybody's just hated on the Pac-12. You and I have sat here and said, it's just awful. It's this, it's that. But is it really that bad where Oregon loses to Auburn simply because they ran out of gas and don't have enough, in my opinion, talented, skill players? You know where I'm at on this? Like,
yeah, but I don't agree with you.
You think it's bad? Still bad?
I think it's bad. And I just think that the Pac-12 needs a signature team. The ACC has a signature team. The Big 12 has a couple signature teams. who is the signature team from the Pac, from the Pac-12? Like a team that is an upper echelon playoff threat, won't lose to a Mountain West school on the road or at home type school. Because okay. Cal's not going to make the playoff.
Okay, so Cal plays, Cal's already beat Washington. Cal plays Oregon after they play ASU.
Right.
You would think along the way Cal would lose, but yes. We don't know that.
They're going to lose.
They're going. We would think they would.
Just like Utah was their best hope, and Utah lost. Like the Pac-12 has to have a team run the table to make the playoff.
But is that because the teams here are good that are chewing up one another?
No.
I know what you're saying about the non-conference. I know what you're saying about the non-conference. But USC on Friday night, I watched that, and Keaton Slovis, that was one of the worst hits that I've seen. That was not good. I don't think Utah or USC is a bad team.
I don't either.
I don't think they're even a middle-of-the-road team in certain – in the ACC, they're challenging. They're better than Pitt.
Sure.
They're better than Louisville. They're not better than Clemson.
Who is the Pac-12's Clemson?
There is not one.
Exactly.
But
and until the Pac-12
but are there,
finds
but are
a
there,
true top five team, they're the Pac-12 is better than a group of five, but I don't think the Pac-12 top to bottom is that much better than the Mountain West Conference.
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far. I know about non-conference. I know about non-conference. I'm talking about as they're in conference play now. Like, I don't think Stanford is good at all. I watched too much of that game, actually. Like, I'm sitting there, and it actually hit me. Why am I watching this? This is awful. Like Oregon's good, but Oregon does not have skill players. They do not have skill
Washington's
players.
Washington's a good team. I don't think Washington's an elite team.
But when I'm watching Texas Tech the other night.
Texas-Oklahoma State. Yep.
I'm watching Oklahoma State, and they're okay. Their quarterback's got some wheels on him.
Oklahoma State would probably win the Pac-12.
Really?
Really.
You believe that?
I do.
Neutral field?
I just and they're not great, but I just it's going back to who is your great team? Who is the great team?
But the cannibalism that's going on in this conference this year, to me, like Washington State looked great, and then they took their foot off the gas, and then what do you know? UCLA roars all the way back and scores 50. Now, is Washington State awful?
No.
And so,
but I wouldn't say UCLA is even average. That's the problem. Like, that's just – you don't want one of your best schools blowing a 32-point home lead to the worst team in the Pac-12 South. You don't want that.
So, like, if I go through the
– I'm not – I know what you're trying to sell, Brad. I'm just not going to buy it, but continue.
Where would TCU be?
Middle of the road Pac-12 school.
I don't think that the conference deserves all the hate that it's getting. It's not awful. It's better. There's these programs that have signature games on television in prime time that teams that schools see over and fans see Michigan over and over and over, and they're horrible.
They are horrible. I don't think the Pac-12 is awful. I just think that they're a notch or two below every other Power Five conference in the country,
including the ACC. Then.
They're comparable with the ACC.
Florida State's awful.
Top to bottom, the Pac-12 is probably better than the ACC, but there's no Clemson in the Pac-12.
Okay, so go through the SEC then. Go through the SEC.
Okay.
So we're not even going to go down the Alabama ramp.
Okay.
Auburn won the game, but it wasn't like they convincingly beat Oregon, in my opinion.
No.
They were pretty even if they played.
They did win at Texas A&M, which is a huge win. Huge win.
But is Texas A&M very good?
Sure. Absolutely.
I was watching some of that game, and I didn't feel like
I think Texas A&M would probably win the Pac-12, but.
Man.
Again, we can just agree to disagree. I'm not hating on the Pac-12. I just think it's just, it's okay. It's fine. Like, but there's no elite team.
Okay. So. Clay Helton losing Bryce Young, the quarterback from Modern Day. He flips from USC to Alabama. So
that's
that happened.
Good news for Caden Slovis, right?
It's good news for Caden Slovis, but I think for Clay Helton, it's not good news. And I don't think it's good news for the Pac-12 to lose a player like that at that high profile. I know Arizona State is trying to do the whole national brand thing. I get it. I understand where they're going with it. But I think for the conference as a whole, that was a hit. to the conference when you lose somebody of that caliber. Friday night, I went to Mountain Point, Hamilton, and I want to go support those kids from Mountain Point. I talked to a lot of people there. There's going to be more shoes that drop on that story. It's going to happen. I was really disappointed in the Mountain Point fan section. They were killing this poor quarterback from Mountain Point, like in a way that should not happen. A sophomore should not be saying, "Who the bleep are you throwing the football to? Bleep, bleep, bleep." That just shouldn't happen. And
but as you wrote about last week, that's becoming more and more of a theme in the stands with.
No, I mean, I've been in stands.
Unruly parents.
Are you hearing that when you're out?
No, because I'm never in the stands, but I just know how parents can be. So
yeah, it's
little Johnny needs to play more.
No, I know. You were at Higley?
I was at Higley at Millennium. Because who doesn't want to make two drives out to Goodyear in 3 weeks?
Oh, so there you go with your little violin.
Mine's like a medium-sized
your violin.
Oh. Yours is about the size of my hand.
I think your story started with the trek out to.
I should be lucky. From your house, it would take 4 days to get to Goodyear.
No, we played at. I was a dad at Kellis High School on Wednesday
from my house. That's just as far.
59 miles.
That's just as far.
Door to door. And the game was not even competitive. So, all right. All right, our work is done here. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board, as always. Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything, depending on the day.
Today, nothing.
All he did was get Michael Fabiano lined up and Charlie Regal and other stuff, too. So we're going to go work on TV show now, which we do with Fox Sports Arizona. We are partners with them. Brad Sussmat Football AZ, which airs 14 times during the week on FSAZ. By the way, if you're just catching us for the first time, we are self-funded. We do this through sponsors. We don't sit here and say, hey, pay $4.95 a month. That's just my model, and we've had sponsors through the years. But we appreciate those that sponsor us and those that are even considering sponsoring us. All right. Have yourself a great day.